असतो मा सत्कमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्यो मा अमृतंगमय ॐ शांति 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 लॉर्ड लीड फ्रॉम द अनरियल टू द रियल लीड इज फ्रॉम इग्नोरेंस टू इल्यूमिनेशन Lead us from death to immortality. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. Om Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsa Chanuramardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat We are discussing the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is the essence of Vedanta. In a most simplified manner, direct and applicable in our day-to-day life. Any philosophy, any religion that cannot help us to solve our problems is a useless philosophy. Any religion that cannot help us, whatever be the problem, that religion fails to attract people. In this world, we find that there are millions and millions of people who claim to be religious. But yet, when we look at their lives, they are extremely miserable lives. Now, religion can help us in two ways. One, it should be able to help us live a day-to-day life in a much better manner than we do right now. But that's not the end or goal of religion. It is to take us to that state which is our birthright. Now, before we aim for a higher goal, we should be able to deal with our day-to-day problems. It is a paradoxical thing that these days science and technology has advanced so much. The purpose of technological innovations is very plain. It is to make human life easier, happier life. And instead, it has done just the opposite. One of the things we are labeled with these days is that we have become alcoholics. Not with drink, but with work, workaholics. Work is a venue of running away from ourselves. This is one. Secondly, emotionally, we have become extraordinarily sensitive. So, can Bhagavad Gita help us in this matter? Let us deal with this. First of all, let me give a brief introduction so that we can go into these points. There is also a historical greatness in the Bhagavad Gita. Even today, that problem has not been solved, though the solution has been given by Sri Krishna as well as by Sri Ramakrishna. What is the solution? We are quarreling which path is superior, which religion is superior, which yoga is superior. You know, as you know, there are four yogas, four pathways to our evolution. Do not understand God only in a restricted sense. We are all potentially divine. What it means is, Physically we can attain health, mentally we can become mature personalities, of course spiritually we understand, realize who we are. Even national problems also very much can be solved by the application of these spiritual principles. The higher a principle, the more comprehensive its capacity to solve the problems. Now, to live a life properly and to uncover our potentialities, there are four and only four pathways. These go by the name of yogas. There are four yogas. Every religion is nothing but an expression, particular expression of one or more of these yogas. What are these four yogas? Karma yoga, Bhakti yoga, Raja yoga, and Jnana yoga. But first of all, what is the definition of yoga? You know, nowadays the word yoga has become very popular. What does yoga mean? Weird postures, you know, standing upside down on the head. This is known as yoga. Real meaning of yoga is that which joins us with something higher, higher nature of our own higher nature. So, karma means work. If work can help us lift to our own real nature, if it can help us manifest our potentialities, then that becomes karma yoga. Similarly, if emotion can join us with something higher, that becomes bhakti yoga. If intellect can help us join with God, that becomes jnana yoga. If willpower can help us join with our higher nature, that is called Raja yoga. Just keep this mind. Another definition that I would like you to keep in your mind is, you know, what is Vedanta? Oh, it's a Hindu philosophy. No, it is true, it is a Hindu philosophy, but it is a universal philosophy. Vedanta is not the copyright of Hindus. It is copyrighted by God Himself. And He has made it public domain. You can download it. Anyone can do that. And apply it to his or her own benefit. So, here is the definition of religion, or I am using the word Vedanta instead of religion. What is that? Anything that can help us become better in any way, that is Vedanta. Supposing someone is suffering from hunger, what is Vedanta for him? Bhagavad Gita? Eating Bhagavad Gita? Give him food. Someone is suffering from, say, an illness. What is the Vedanta for him?
Medicine.
Suppose somebody is suffering from toothache, rotten tooth. What is the Vedanta for him?
Pull
out his teeth. That is Vedanta. So please keep this definition. If it cannot help us, if it degrades us, if it makes our mind contract, if it makes us dependent, that is anything but religion. Vedanta is a beautiful word, so I am using it. But you understand it in the real sense of religion. Now there are millions of followers of religion. What do these leaders of this religion try to do for those followers? They want their followers to depend upon them, accepting through us, you cannot reach God. You cannot manifest your potentialities. Say, accepting through Jesus, you have no salvation. What he means, sir, that you give me money and then I will see that you will never reach Jesus Christ because you will be dependent upon me again and again like a drug. Suppose you go to Jesus Christ, just a kind of thought, and confront him and say, Jesus, I don't like you. I want to follow something else. I want to follow Swami Dayatmananda. Have you any objection? He will say, thank God, I am relieved of you. He would be the first person to say, whatever helps you, do that. Because ultimately, you will be coming to me. You are calling upon me, whichever path. It's a beautiful slogan by Southwest. Wherever you go, you fly Southwest. Have you noticed it? So, this is the definition, Vedanta. Whatever helps. And there are four ways by which we can be helped. These are called yogas. Why four? Why not three? Why not five? Why only just four? Have you ever thought about it? It's because each one of us have only four faculties. We have a propensity for action. And therefore, we are active. Then we have emotions. Then we have intellect. And also we have the will. In each one of us, all these are present. But one particular faculty dominates. And most often, do you know what is that faculty? It is emotion. And therefore, we have to take advantage of that particular faculty, purify it, concentrate it, and direct it towards God. So this is why Bhakti Yoga, everywhere you will see this path of devotion has become so very important. And this question also had naturally cropped up in Bhagavad Gita. See, from the teachings, we can infer that there was a conflict of opinion between the followers of knowledge and the followers of devotion. So, Arjuna, that is a representative, a rational human being, confronts Krishna and asks him that of these two paths, in your opinion, which is better? And categorically, Sri Krishna says, though all the paths are very nice, but I think it is easier to reach me. Me means here, not Krishna, but reach me. Me means I. Reach your real higher nature. Reach yourself through the path of devotion. Why is he favoring devotion? Because it is the most natural thing for us. Even animals are also endowed with emotion. So from the very beginning, there were some people who became fanatics, as it were, and they emphasized their particular path. But they had never won the battle. India is a marvelous country for the flourishing of religions. No country on earth has ever permitted such beautiful freedom so that religions can flourish unhindered. That's why religion has grown rampantly sometimes. So there were the followers of knowledge, especially propagated by Shankaracharya. Then there were the followers of Ramanujacharya. Whose followers do you think are more in number? Very naturally, the followers of the path of devotion only. Because our heart longs to love. The greatest thing on earth. Do you know what it is? Love. We want to love. Now, we all experience something very nice. If somebody loves us, very naturally we feel attracted to that person. But you know what is the most dominant thing within each one of us which wants to express? the greatest joy comes out of giving. So you give out your love, you try to love someone. One simple example will clarify it. You see, when a woman hasn't become mother, then she may be loved by her husband, by her parents, by her friends, and she experiences that emotion called being loved. But as soon as she gets married, imagine that she has a child. Now who gives out the love? Do you think the joy the mother gets out of loving the baby and taking care of the baby can be compared to any other amount of love she receives? Just think over. It's a most marvelous thing. You just try to go back, think over your experience and see. Whenever you loved something, you gave love, you derived the greatest joy. Why, you know? Because to be loved is a kind of selfishness. Me, me. But to love means I am effacing myself and putting the other in the front, forefront. Do you see the point? When I am loving, I am not talking about this modern kind of love, you know. You see, there was an Andhra youth. He was a college student. And he met a girl and said, "I love you so much, I want to marry you. Don't you dare to refuse, otherwise I will commit suicide." The girl became jittery. "See, is this fellow going to commit suicide because I don't feel like marrying him?" So she became very nervous. He reassured her, "Don't become nervous. This is my habit, saying like this to every girl I meet." This word is so much misused. "I love you, I love you. I cannot live without you. For how long?" After that, "I cannot live with you." Wonderful thing, you know. You have to face the fact. Why do people get married? Tell me one simple truth. Why do people get married? To be happy, isn't it? Why do they divorce?
To be happy.
Okay, coming back to the subject. Love is the most dominant faculty we all have. But we should understand what is true love. Is not instantaneous emotional response. It is a purified emotion which is ready to give in. The difference between emotion and devotion, or emotion and love, is this. Emotion is a slave. If you praise me, I will be happy. If you serve me, I am happy. And if you say something, then I feel bad. That is, I am a slave to circumstances. I am responding, I am reacting, but I am not acting. Whereas in the case of love, I am the master. I chose to love, so I love. And loving means what? You know what is true love? Love means to give, to sacrifice, efface the I. That is the true love. Why? Because this love obliterates this distinction between me and the object that I love. That is why it is the greatest thing in this world. Love is the greatest thing. And Lord Himself says, if anybody loves me, I am ready to give myself up to him. There is no emotion in this world which can draw the Lord to the devotee as the emotion called love. Love is a very noble direction of every type of emotional expression. This word love in English language is a very weak word. And it is indistinguishable from the other word. What is the other word? Love and lust. We don't use the word lust. If a young man doesn't go and meet a girl and say lust after it, she will slap you. But that's what he means really. But if he loves, then he is prepared to sacrifice himself for her. That is true love. There are great examples of this. Recently I read a beautiful story. There was a girl and she was dating a boy. And the boy truly loved her. And this girl had met a terrible accident. She became paralyzed from down the waist. And she was sure this boy would desert. The moment he heard about it, he resigned his job here in America. He flew to the hospital where she was. And she took care of her for I think nearly 1.5 years. She was out of danger. She lived, but she became paralyzed. But as soon as they provided, you know, some wheelchair and all that, he married her and continued to look after her. And later on they had beautiful children. You know, that is what I call true love. Is it not a wonderful spiritual thing? What are we talking about? Okay. So coming back to the subject, two faculties are very dominant within us. One is called the faculty of action. And these days, these technological innovations, instead of helping us less dependent upon work, instead of making us work less, it is only making us work more. These days, people are working more number of hours. Even they are working on the aeroplanes, in the toilets, with the laptops, with the cell phones and all those things. Now the point I want to point, first of all, whatever action we do, that alters our consciousness, that alters our awareness. And if it alters in a negative way, we are liable to undergo suffering. Only when it alters in a positive way can it really help us. This is where the Karma Yoga taught by Bhagavan Krishna comes to our help in the Gita. So, Karma Yoga is the most prominently discussed subject in the Bhagavad Gita. But most of us do not understand really what the Lord is talking about. You know, it's peculiar. Even Swamis misuse this word. Supposing there is a festival in our Vedanta center and a lot of mess needs to be cleared. So we say to devotees, are you prepared to do Karma Yoga? What we plainly mean is that you come and clear the mess. If we say, are you prepared to work hard, they will say no. But if we say, are you prepared to do Karma Yoga? Yes, Swami. You know, euphemism. So, this karma, we have to discuss a little bit. Every action that we do produces three types of reaction. Positive, negative and neutral. There is no action which doesn't provoke one of these three reactions. So we have to be careful what type of reaction we are getting most of the time. We must do or act in such a way that these reactions would not be too negative. Let me give an example first of all. What do I mean by these three reactions? Supposing you are walking down a street, down a road, and you see somebody coming towards you. And if you think he is your dear friend, what will you do? You move towards him. If you think he is somebody to be avoided, you turn your face and look for some time at the shop items until he passes away. And if you think he is neither a friend nor an undesirable person, he has nothing to do with it, then it is a neutral reaction. Nevertheless, your mind has already decided This is the type of reaction I will have to do it. And how does this reaction come about? It comes about because we have habituated ourselves to react in this particular manner again and again and again. Now, even though these reactions are, most of the time, they are unconscious reactions. But the result would be disaster. Disaster because any reaction, if it is not conscious, purposive, then we become slaves to it. What is slavery? You know, you put a gun behind. Slavery goes in many ways. One devotee asked me, Swami, it is indicated in our scriptures that chanting God's name all the time is a wonderful thing for liberation. So, suppose I don't have so much time or energy. Suppose I put plop a CD in the CD player, playing God's name. Will it give me salvation? I said, I don't know whether you get salvation, but the CD player will definitely. So, the point I'm trying to make is, anything we do unconsciously, we become slaves because something else is dictating to us, you do this, you don't do that, you behave like this. The purpose of spiritual life is to consciously direct our mind so that we become master. Conscious direction of anything is called mastery. Unconsciously, whatever we do, that is called slavery. What is happiness? Happiness is whenever we do something consciously, purposefully, that leads us to happiness. And otherwise, it leads us to the opposite reaction. This is what Krishna was talking about. Even though we are doing so much work these days, it is a slavish work. Why? Because we are not doing it as masters. A gun is put behind you, we will give you so much salary. These days companies are very, very diplomatic. They say, you are free. That is the first are you free? Stop going to the office, you will see how free you are. Yeah. So the office will say, you are free. We want our employees to feel that they are the masters, not we. So you come any time you want. You go any time you want, provided you finish this job. Target. Meet the target. Now the target is so great, even without this any watch, you will have to do it. Is it not slavery? How do we know it is slavery? Because if it is not slavery, you would be very happy to do it. But it is not leading to happiness. Definitely not. How do I know that it is not leading? If 1/3 of the people are crazy, need psychologist assistance, you do not call it a happy society or even a sane society. And incidentally, there is a beautiful book called The Sane Society by Eric Fromm, which is highly revealing. Eric Fromm, Sane Society. Okay. So, what is spiritual? What is Karma Yoga? Karma Yoga means, first of all, you will decide, this is what I want to do. And then bring out all your faculties, power of concentration, power of discrimination, and power of discernment, and watch at every step how you are progressing, whether in the direction you want to reach or not, and that is called Karma Yoga. But it is not as simple as that. What is the first thing? There is a law of karma by Hindus. The law of karma says that if you do something, the result is inevitable. Karma phala is anivarya, inevitable. So, if you really believe in it, whatever we are now, good or bad, is the result of what we had done in the past. And if you really believe in it, the future is not in the hands of President Bush. It is in our hands. My fate is in my hands, not even in the hands of God. That's why in Hinduism, we give a special name for God. You know what it is? Vidhata. Vidhata means supervisor. God is only a supervisor. That he sees this person has done so much, he deserves this result. So that why Vidhata is necessary? Because there is a law. If you do this, this result must come, good or bad. Now somebody must see that this will not go wrong. It must work properly. That is the role of God. Good or evil is according to our own action. So what is the first thing that Karma Yoga teaches us? We use the word Karma Yoga. What is the definition of Karma Yoga? Work in such a way that it will make you free. Political freedom, economic freedom, and freedom from all sorts of constraints. Not merely spiritual freedom. So, how do I know that I am really progressing Karma Yoga? Because there are certain signs. What are the signs? If I am really following Karma Yoga, then first of all, I become the master. Secondly, my power of concentration would increase. Thirdly, I would become a realist. You know, you don't expect to sow, apple seed and expect mango fruits to hang to you. If you want mango fruits, then you have to sow mango seeds. But what most of us do, as I say, in fun, what we have is lottery ticket mentality. By some miracle, I will do only this much, but I will get so much result. It is not going to happen. Take it for granted. So, first thing is, do it consciously. Second thing is, do it with a clear-cut goal in view. Third, decide what is the right means to do it. And fourthly, that the result will come. But when it will come, where it will come, and how it will come, this remains a mystery in human life. Now suppose you have done something wonderful. Don't expect. There are certain actions for which the result is immediate, instantaneous. For example, if you put your hand in boiling water, the result is instantaneous. If you plant the seeds of a marigold, then the result will, in 2-3 days time, you see the seedlings coming up. And in about a month or 40 days, you also see the flowers coming up. If you plant the seed of a banyan tree, then the sprout itself may come after 1 year or 2 years. And by the time it grows up, we may not be there to see its result. But there are certain types of actions, the results of which we do not see in this world. It is a mystery. But don't ever think the results will not come. So Karma Yoga involves all these things. And it is also important to understand that if we do certain things, that the results may not come, or different type of results may come. That is never going to happen. Exactly, the cause produces the effect, neither less nor more, just 100%. So, it's very important to understand this principle. So, why are we suffering? Because of our undue expectations. This is one of the biggest problems. So when Krishna is advising us that be detached, be a karma yogi, you know, you read Gita commentaries, be detached, don't expect any fruits. It is a silly, nonsensical thing. If we don't expect any fruits, we are never going to do any work. We have to expect fruits. And even if you don't expect, they will come. But what is meant is that the fruits will come. Be realistic in what type of fruits you are expecting. You should have an estimate that this is the type of seeds I am sowing. So this is the type of results I will expect. Suppose a student studies only for 1 hour a day. Can he expect to be passing first class first? Unless somebody else writes the examinations for him, which happens in India. You pay some money and somebody else will write for you. But you can't enjoy things. You may have certificate, but you will never enjoy the job. You know, Peter's principle works very much here. You may be made an officer, but you will not be able to enjoy. There is a nice joke, you know, Joseph. One semi-literate North Indianer had become minister, chief minister of a state. And he was given a chauffeur-driven car because he became a minister. And the driver was waiting for him next day. The minister had to be driven to the office. And the minister got into his head that being a minister, he can also drive the car. So he told the driver that you get out, sit in the back seat, I will drive. So the driver got out, stood sideways, on the, you know, there you walk, pathway. But he did not sit in the car. The minister said, you rogue, sit in the back. That is how Indians address the, you know, the people. Sit in the back, I am going to drive. He folded his car and said, I am going to speak in Hindi now. Saab, ye car hai car, sarkar nahi, jo koi bhi chala sakta hai. Difficult to translate in English language. Sir, this is a car, not a government. Any fool can drive. So, we must recognize our capacities and expect the results will definitely come. And we are people who expect more than, but you see, there also there is something very wonderful. We do bad things and don't expect bad results. We do very many bad things, and even if we expect very little bad result. But if we do very little good things and we expect a huge quantity of good results. This is not, no, it is unrealistic. It is not going to happen. So what is Krishna advising us is, first of all, you do not know that when the results will come. Secondly, be realistic in your expectation. Now, when we are rational, when we expect according to common sense, realistic things, and we can also get delayed due to some reasons, then we won't be too much disappointed. We can cope, you know, we are all, do actions, you know, such as getting married and this and this and this and so many things. But our expectations go wrong. We have high expectations, unrealistic expectations. Very, you know, there is a definition of a successful wife and a successful husband. You know, a successful husband is one who can earn more than his wife can spend. And a successful wife is she who can get such a husband. Do you think it is possible? How many husbands and wives are successful in that way? You know, a man, married man, sorry about it, lost his credit card. He didn't complain to the police. And police got hold of the thief and they came back to him and said, why did you not, you know, complain to us? He said, you know, I found out the thief was spending far less than my wife. He decided not to pursue the thief. Okay, come back to the subject. We have to be very intelligent according to our capacity, according to our means, according to the time, according to the circumstances. We have to do actions. And these actions must be done with complete consciousness, focus, and we should not be too highly expecting the results. Then, when the results come, we will not be affected both ways. We should not be jumping up with excitement because something has happened. We should not be too much depressed. That is called karma yoga. Then what happens? The mind remains what Krishna called in a state of sthita prajna. Prajna means intelligence. Though it is used here in a spiritual sense, I am interpreting it even in a common sensical. Prajna means moderate intelligence. Sthita means what? The mind is calm. It doesn't react too much. It should react a little, otherwise it becomes a stone. You should be able to enjoy everything as a spectator enjoys a sport, or as we watch a film and enjoy it. We should be able to do it. Then we will not be subject to so much of misery in this world. So that is the way karma yoga has to be done as advocated by Krishna. This definition only applies at the lower stages. At the very highest stage, our scriptures tell us that it is God who has become this body. It is God who has become this mind. It is God who, as it were, is caught in this framework of body-mind complex. Therefore, whatever is happening through this body and mind throughout the whole world is nothing but a sport of God. This is called, it's a special word we use, it is called Leela. It's a beautiful word, but that's a very high state. But at our state, let us not be under any delusion, we are doing any karma yoga. If we are sane, focused, concentrated, conscious, do things purposely, expect just the result and not too much, then we are far ahead in our evolutionary state. So this is about karma yoga. Second point with regard to this karma yoga is we have to control our desires. Many of us suffer because, see, what is the problem? Shall we not have the sky as the limit for our desires? Yes, you can theoretically, but your time is limited, your mental energy is limited, and your instruments, which is this body and mind, they are limited. You would be a fool if you try to fulfill too many desires. Pursuance of too much of happiness is counterproductive. This is a point well worth noting down. Then I have also to indicate, what is the purpose of human life? It is to attain to our own state, and we are of the nature of Satchidananda, blissful state. Now the point is, where is this knowledge? Where is this happiness? Is it outside or is it inside? According to Vedanta, it is all inside. All that we need to do is to uncover it. So, this is one point you will have to note down. The second point is, there are different degrees of happiness. There is a sensual happiness. There is an intellectual happiness. There is a moral happiness. And there is a creative happiness. And there is a spiritual happiness. This is what called in general. Nowadays, you know, Hindu spiritual books are becoming bestsellers. You must have heard the word chakra. You heard the word chakra? Chakra means what? See, they think there are six places in the human body, starting right from this solar plexus and up to between the eyebrows, and the last one is the 1000-petaled lotus, Sahasrara chakra it is called. So a chakra is somewhere starting from here to here. What a stupid idea they got. What has that got to do with the body? Chakra means a state of consciousness. It is purely psychological, psychical, rather than physical. You cut open the body, solar plexus, to see whether there is a sushumna patha. Only you will have slip disc rather than finding out the chakra. It's nothing to do with that. So how our mind, at what state it dwells, what it thinks about reality. This is an entirely different subject. It has nothing to do with the physical body. So this is a point to be understood. So why I raised this point is, happiness proportionately increases as we ascend from the lower chakra to the higher chakra. The quality and quantity of happiness also increases. There is no way you can go to a Marks and Spencer's, you don't know, or Wall Market, and I want to, you know, so much amount of, you know, half a kilo of happiness. You cannot buy it, you cannot borrow it, you cannot steal it, you cannot email it to anybody. It is purely something which we, each one of us, have to realize. The higher the state of consciousness, the higher is the happiness. No amount of struggle living at a lower state of consciousness is going to give us the higher state of consciousness. And each one of us have the tremendous urge to attain to higher and higher states of consciousness. And so yoga shows us the way how to ascend from a lower state of consciousness to a higher state of consciousness, thereby making us the enjoyers of that particular level of happiness. And reaching God, reaching Sahasrara Padma, our kingdom of heaven, there we become one with happiness. We don't become enjoyers of happiness, but we become completely united with happiness. We become the nature of happiness. That is the goal of real yoga. So karma, if it can help us, as I was discussing, so when our mind becomes calm, the calmer it becomes, the more it becomes strong, the more it is able to withstand the shocks of life, the better knowledge it will have. These are the what is called characteristics or expressions by which we understand whether we are really becoming karma yogins or karma bhogins or karma rogins. There are three words: yoga, bhoga, roga. You know what is yoga. You know what is bhoga? Enjoyment. You know what is roga? Illness. So, if most of the karma yoga start with karma yoga and progress into karma bhoga and end up with karma roga. See, they cannot live without work. Some without work means what? Anything we do is work. So supposing, you know, I am alone, I feel bored, so I raid the fridge, or I put on the CD player, or I go on now flicking the TV from channel to channel. America is great, 500 channels. You know, you can go on flicking for 3 hours without watching anything. So, if we are true karma yogis, what does it do? It slowly makes our mind pure and it allows us to ascend from a lower state of consciousness to a higher state of consciousness. Okay. Then there is this path of devotion. We are all endowed with emotion. We react emotionally to every situation in life, as I had already mentioned. But it's a wonderful news that we have this emotion, because if we can somehow purify it a little bit, collect it at one place and direct it towards God, then that becomes bhakti yoga. Because what is bhakti yoga? Loving the Lord. When we develop love for the Lord, devotion or love for the Lord, two things happen, or rather three things happen. You know what are those things? First of all, we love ourselves. Then we also love the world. Then of course we love God. Because love is like putting on a colored specs. This is an apt analogy. Now suppose you put on black colored specs. When you look at the world, how does the world appear? As black. When you look at yourself, how do you look at yourself? As? So it doesn't say, I look at the world as black, but I look at myself as white. And when you look at, of course, at God, He will also appear to be black. This is an illustration to show when our mind is colored with the color of love, then whatever it looks at, it can only love. It cannot do otherwise. Now, that disposes of the interesting question, are not many spiritual aspirants very selfish? They go into a corner of the room, close their eyes and trying to somehow get out of this world. No. They are developing that capacity to love. And once they develop that love, as they develop that love, whatever they do, it is done with love. That is the most wonderful thing. So, here the point comes, what should we do to develop this love? Does it mean that we have to stop loving our family, our children, our country, or the duties we do? This is where the greatest teaching of Sri Krishna comes. The first hint he gives is that you must not make any distinction between me and the world. All creatures are but my manifestations. That is the first hint. Second, he says, develop as much emotion as you can. The more you can develop emotion, the better raw material it is, provided you don't direct it towards the world. You know, you can even abuse God. If you abuse God, the more you abuse God, the better person you will become. This is what actually, you know, the psychologists are also advocating. Suppose you hate your boss and go and, you know, give him some fistfuls, but not actually. Go to your room, take up a pillow, write the name, my boss, and go on giving it. And after that you meet the boss, oh, he is a great man. No problem. That is psychologically speaking. Express your emotions. Direct them towards God. Because God is love, what you get back? Only love you get back. It could be anger, it could be fear, it could be hatred. These are so-called negative. There is no negative emotion. You know, this is something we have to understand. No emotion is negative. When an emotion is directed wrongly, that becomes a negative emotion. This is the simple fact. I don't love this person. I am angry with this person. Why are you angry with this person? Because you don't love the person. Why don't you love the person? Because he told you the truth. In fact, such people are great helps for us. You know, there is a wonderful saying, O Lord, that you please help me. I will take care of my enemies. Please help me take care of my friends. Have you heard this? Because your friends, most of your friends, they don't tell you what is your problem. But the enemies, they are not afraid to tell you. They are, you know, these free psychiatric consultants. You don't need to pay any money for them. Anyway, so how to develop this love? Do not suppress the emotion. Rather, increase the strength of the emotion. But if you increase without directing it in the proper way, then it will be very disastrous. So the only worthy object of directing our emotions is God Himself. Now how do we do that? Where is this God? Do you mean to say you come to the temple and say, and go on shouting at this God? No. I'll give a small illustration how this can be done. Krishna Himself is an example. His mother, Yashoda, loved Him. What did she do? She, as any mother does it, she bathed Him. She caressed Him. She fed Him. And she went on playing with Him. Every mother does it. What is the difference between what Sri Krishna's mother had done? He educated her. That do not look upon me as a mere human baby. I am not a human baby. I am God. Do you know the instances? That once his brother complains, you know, Balarama complains, Mama, this Krishna had eaten a lot of mud. And Mother Yashoda comes, did you eat? He said, no, Mom. Mommy, no, I didn't eat. You know, if he was born here, he would have called Mommy. And then, he's a very clever fellow. You see, I'm not telling a lie. Please come, I open my mouth, you stare into my mouth. And Mother went and stared. And what did she behold? The entire universe was there. Having that kind of experience, why was he showing? He was slowly educating her. I appreciate your love, but it must be as God, not as a human being. So he showed so many such miraculous things in his life, and the result was Yashoda had become the greatest knower of truth. Anybody who came into contact with Krishna became the greatest knower of God. Even an ordinary illiterate woman loved him. Instantaneously he directed her love. He did not reject. Look, I am a holy man. Don't look at me like that. You will go to the other place. He didn't say anything like that. In fact, he attracted all the people to him, men, women, boys, girls, old people, young people, cows, trees. Is there anything that he didn't attract? But all of them, not as a human being, as a manifestation of God. He made them. What is the result? Even this semi-illiterate cowherdess, Gopika, she had that realization. Na khalu Gopika Nandano Bhavan Akhila Dehinam Antaratma Drik. You are not the son of an ordinary cowherdess woman. You are the indweller in every creature. They realized him in that way. So, same thing we can do. That's what Sri Ramakrishna used to say to householders. You beget your children, bring them up as Krishna, as Divine Mother. When you are bathing them, you are bathing God. Suppose they do mischief, they say, my God, I am sorry, you are very mischievous. So you get the karma phala. Give a nice slap. If you want, you say, Hare Rama, and you give him a slap. This will make a lot of difference. So, spiritualize, this is called in ordinary language, spiritualizing every activity of our day-to-day life. You spiritualize your emotions. But to spiritualize these emotions, we need a focus and say, I am getting angry with God. I am loving God. I am being friendly with God. I am hating God. I am punishing God. I am rewarding God. We should never forget it. That is the real meaning of purifying the bhakti yoga, taking God's name. Otherwise, it becomes parrot-like. You know, parrots can be taught God's name. Or what is that bird? You call it parakeet or something like that?
Parakeet.
A kind of parrot. You know the story? That once a thief entered into a house to steal. And he thought nobody was there. Actually, no owner was there. So he entered. As soon as he broke into the room, then he heard, Jesus is watching you. Jesus is watching you. Man got very jittery, you know. Jesus is watching me. So he had a torch light, he put it on. See, there was this parakeet was there. It was screeching. Jesus is watching you. Jesus is watching you. Now this fellow got very courageous. So he's only parrot. What the hell is your name? And the parakeet, my name is Moses. Moses, I am Moses. And who the hell is Jesus? Look behind you, that Rottweiler. It is standing behind him. That is Jesus. Jesus is watching you. Be careful.
Alsatian.
Alsatian. That is the name of the Alsatian is Jesus. Jesus is watching you. Keep associate every emotion with God. That what does he say, Krishna? Whatever you do. Yat karoshi yadashnasi yajyuhoshi dadasya tat kurushva madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you pray, whatever you worship, whatever you offer, offer to me. What does he mean? You build up an altar or a fireplace and then do it like olden times people used to do it, homas? No. Whatever you do, you are eating. Who is eating? God is eating. Then you are walking. Who is walking? God is walking. You are sleeping. Who is sleeping? God is sleeping. Whatever you do, you are breathing. Who is breathing? God is breathing. This beautiful idea we get in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Brahmarpanam Brahmavi Brahmaknao Brahmanahutam Brahmaivatena Gantavyam Brahmakarma Samadhina. Then that person attains to the Samadhi called Brahmakarma Samadhi. That means ultimately, in his eyes, everything remains Brahman. It is Brahman. Only he recognizes it as Brahman. This how we sublimate our emotions. We direct all our actions, offer them to God so that our mind remains calm and quiet. We enjoy this world. We also slowly progress towards higher centers of consciousness. Having said this, Krishna also brings a reconciliation and says there is no inherent conflict between these two paths. Both paths lead one to the same goal. In other words, is what Sri Ramakrishna said, every religion leads us to the same God. All roads lead to Rome. The saying is there, not now. You can put it in a different way, no? All the roadways lead to wall market. So I would not prolong it long time, you know. One speaker was giving, talking, going on and on and on. So suddenly he realized he talked too much. So he looked at the watch and then, "I'm sorry, and my watch stopped." And somebody shouted, "He said, there is a calendar in front of you." There's beautiful ideas in the Bhagavad Gita. Today, what I wanted to speak is about two particular pathways, Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. What is Karma Yoga? Be rational. Expect just what you have sown. You first set your goal, then you expect reasonable results only, and they may come sooner or later, but don't get disappointed. That is the meaning of depending upon God. If you have this kind of attitude, then you would not be a slave to your work. Then there is the other path called devotion, and we are, most of us are endowed with emotion. What is devotion? Sublimation of emotions towards God is called devotion, because we are endowed with a large proportion of these emotions. It is easier for us to follow the path of devotion, but inherently there is no conflict. These are not two separate ways which are going. One particular faculty would be dominant, but the other particular faculties would be subservient to this particular faculty. Now, to summarize, what have I talked all this long time? Vedanta, or religion, what is the definition? That which helps us to solve our day-to-day problems, that which helps us to slowly progress from a lower state of consciousness to a higher state of consciousness. That alone is worthy to be called religion. And Vedanta gives hope to every one of us, because this is not something newly to be acquired. We are already divine, only we need to remove the obstructions. What it means is, we can have hope. There is nothing called hopelessness. The only thing we have to expect is, Hindus, they believe that this life is not the only life. We had past lives, we will have future lives. So let us not give up hope. If we cannot seem to progress in this life, or if we cannot seem to get what we expect in this life, we are sure to get in the future. Karma phala will never go in vain. That is why Sri Krishna gives a wonderful hope for all of us. He says, "O Arjuna, declare with the loudest voice that my devotee is never ever going to perish." What it means is, devotee who practices the teachings of the great Lord, of any religion, it doesn't matter, he is going to only become a better person, and never the other way around. That is the message of Sri Krishna through the Bhagavad Gita. There are, as our friend had announced, there are also another two talks. I will deal with a different subject later in my future classes. I want these talks to be relevant, to make them very clear, no cobwebs in the brain, and I want them to be very practical, which can help us in our day-to-day life. Otherwise, no religion is worthy even to be thought about. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.
Based on what you are saying on Karma Yoga,
yeah.
Just to take an example, let us think that there is a person who really loves painting.
Yes.
And he has got a choice. he can just go on painting his road of life, and whatever, wherever it leads in his life, he can end up there.
Yes.
That is one possibility.
Yeah.
Other possibility is he can be more realistic and take some job which is going to be sufficient for him to fulfill whatever his desires.
Yeah.
And at the same time allows him to do his painting on the spare pad.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So what is right and what is wrong in this one? Or does it mean that whatever makes him happy, that is the path he should pursue and go about it?
I am very happy to hear from you this statement, but already you are biased in your question. You know what you said?
Uh-huh.
Let him be more realistic. What did you mean by that? You meant that suppose this painter pursues the path of painting, you have already come to the conclusion that he is going to remain poor, unrecognized, starving, and getting abuse from everybody. Is it not?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's we do not know. You see, some people, they might have that fate. But some people might be recognized, they might become even richer than earning through any other job. We just do not know. Okay. Now, actually, Karma Yoga has nothing to do with this question. That if the person is only pursuing a particular type of thing, here is a question, what shall I do? Shall I follow my instincts because I love to paint? I do not know whether that will fetch me livelihood, whether it will make me famous, whether I will just go on suffering unrecognized. So he has to rely upon God. If he does that, then God, whatever he decides, this person has to accept. Karma Yoga means what? No karma will go in vain. Did you catch that point? But I also mentioned, it is the result of karma is a mystery. When, where and how the result will come, we do not know. It may come next life. Let me give an example. Mozart, have you heard about Mozart? At what age he became famous? Do you know?
Very young age.
You know? 3 or 4 years old. He would run the piano, and because he was a small boy, he had to run to put his hands. Now, how do you think he got to that state? If that is the effect, there must be a cause. And we don't see that cause in this life. So, we necessarily infer that the cause must have been there in the past birth, right? So, we do not know. So, the thing is, these are two separate questions. If he doesn't have faith in God, okay, let him take up one choice and go through that. Whatever comes, whether he likes it or not, he has to go through it, right? Suppose, as you say, he is not very confident. I may not get anything out of this painting. In that case, let him, what you call realistically, and make this a hobby rather than the main work of his life. Then let him study, become an engineer or a doctor or whatever. And that much result only he will get. But Karma Yoga means that whether he is painting or doing any other job, he would be, first of all, consciously doing. Secondly, he will have a goal to pursue. Thirdly, his expectations will be very reasonable expectations. And last of all, he will depend entirely upon God to decide what results he will get. Do you see the point? He can do it without relying upon God, being unrealistic. He can do it dependent upon God. So if he depends upon God, be realistic, optimistic, rational, mature, that is called Karma Yoga. Otherwise, like anybody else, take his chance, good or bad. Yes.
What if love,
yeah,
and desiring to encounter and care for God in all of your actions and with all these different people, leads to burnout and workaholism. Do you know what I'm saying? What there's a can be a point where these things conflict, and how to know, you know, how to avoid burnout when your vocation is love,
yeah,
and your vocation is being an offering of God for God and all these different people. Meanwhile, the emails are pouring in asking for help or whatever. I mean, there's a point at which you're a human being and you can't do it all. So how do you decide?
You see, if you really think over your question, the answer is already there. How much can you do? There is only that much amount which this instrument can do. Right? That's why Sri Ramakrishna gave a beautiful answer to this question, a similar question. He asked one of the people who believed in this kind of activity of helping the world, suppose God appears to you, and then how many will you ask him build so many schools, build so many hospitals, so that people could be helped. So it is obviously, no? How many hospitals, how many schools you want to build are anonymous, alcoholic anonymous societies you want God to make. That is one thing. Second thing is, how do you know that somebody is becoming alcohol is also not the will of God? Do you see? If we go deeper into the question, God, you believe in God, isn't it? Doesn't God know that this person is alcoholic, he needs help, and yet he allows this person to be an alcoholic? And do you think he is useless? You know, we do not understand what we mean by God. He knows, he has the power, he can prevent it, but he wants it to be that way. Do you want to go against God's will? So, okay, this is the point. The point is not how much your love is not to be measured by how much you are able to do. Love has nothing to do with what you do or with what you do not do. It is a framework through which you see yourself, you see the whole world. That's all you have to do. Suppose after developing this kind of, or simultaneously developing this kind of framework of love, you want to express your love in some way of activity, then you do it to the best of your ability while not being unrealistic. You know, one of the things which we have to understand, see, who could be more loving than an incarnation of God? Jesus, Buddha, Rama, Krishna, these are supposed to be incarnations of God. Don't you think they are immensely more loving than any one of our individuals? Now here is the question. They have come, they had lived the life, they loved the world, and they showed the way. How much do you think the world has changed? Did it? Do you think even an iota has changed because they came? We don't believe in it. It has not changed. Then the question naturally comes, what is the point of their incarnation if the world has not changed? Now, here is where we have to understand, individuals have been helped by the great incarnations. Powerful transformations came, for example, Saint Francis. So the world as a concept has not changed, will not change, because that is its nature. If you change an apple tree into a mango tree, will it remain an apple tree? Similarly, if you try to change the world in the slightest manner, it won't be the world, it will be something else. But God's will is this world should be like this. Then what is the point of our loving? The point of loving is that to know that God is there and He knows what is happening in this world, and it is His will that it should be like this, and He knows exactly where, when and how he should help this world and he is ever ready. This is one point. But I will give you just one more point of view, which is we always have a judgmental lookout that being an alcoholic is very bad and being, you know, suffering is very bad, or to behave in a particular way is very bad. Sometimes these people may progress towards God much, much more quickly than ordinary people. So many times several so-called greatest sinners of the world have evolved towards God far faster than our snails progress towards God. So the whole point I am making is that we have no control over the world. We have no control over anything excepting a small amount of control over ourselves. Let us develop love. Let us try to do, if we want, the best we can with this offering to God. This is what I can do. Now it is in your hands.